I hear the compliment almost daily. Thank you, people will say, for starting off Howie Mandel, or discovering Jim Carrey, or for giving Russell Peters his big break. I am proud that I played my part in helping these Canadian comedy stars find their success. But they're stars. I suspect they would have found their way with or without me. I'm glad I helped, but it's not my proudest accomplishment. I'm proudest of the fact that every day, over 200 comics wake up in this country and have somewhere that they can call home. A series of clubs, one-nighters, fundraisers, private parties, and corporate events. Because that network of opportunities keeps a lot of talented comics working. But do you know their names? Probably not. You'll go to a comedy club and at the end of the evening, you'll tell me you really liked the last guy. But you've already forgotten his name. You may be a bit of a comedy fan, but between live clubs, the Comedy Network, Just for Laughs, and XM Comedy, you just can't remember who's who. Before the days of this media wash, it used to be easier to stand out. But there were also fewer opportunities back then. Somehow, somebody breaks through. They are so unique that you make sure you see them again. It also helps that they are pleasing to the eye, that they have no discernible drug habit, and that they live in a place where the gatekeepers of show business hang out. It helps if a comic reflects the zeitgeist or has family connections to the business, but sometimes it's just pure luck, being in the right place at the right time. I broke into the business by sheer accident. I was working at Harborfront the summer after graduating from York University with a degree in English. This would make me eligible to work for any taxi company in the country, I guess, but it was the 70s, and nobody really wanted a real job anyway. My gig was to put on a powder blue leisure suit and greet the passers-by as they wandered around the site, handing them pamphlets about the entertainment programmers like Don Cullen had scheduled. One holiday weekend, a big water tank and scaffolding had been set up for a high diving act. But the announcer couldn't make it, so Cullen scrambled for a substitute. I'd put public speaking on my resume, which sounded better than student agitator twice arrested. So I was given the job of announcing the shows. 8 shows a day, all week long. The boredom set in, and I couldn't help but improvise. The next diver is one of only 7 in the world who can execute the 3.5 gainer, and is the only one of the 7 with a mole on his right thigh. Don walked by at the exact moment that line got a laugh, and at the end of the day offered me the job of running Harborfront's open mic on Wednesdays. A dumb joke, and it changed my life. See? Just luck. I'm often asked if I can tell right away who's bound for stardom. Nope. No idea. Can't do it. An impossible task. I can tell you who's talented, but not who will capture the hearts of millions. There are, in the end, just too many variables. My own taste is surely no barometer. In music, I always loved those obscure one-hit wonders as much as the bands that racked up platinum sales. It's no different in comedy. A comic once said to me, "Jim Carrey makes $30 million a year. I make $30,000. I know Jim is funnier than me, but is he 1,000 times funnier?" Point taken. The distribution of fame and fortune is unfair, and no law will ever be passed to render it otherwise. Many of the comedians in this volume are barely known outside of a small circle of comedy fanatics, but it doesn't mean that they aren't wonderful writers and performers. They all deserve to be famous, but maybe they just weren't in the right place at the right time. But recently, a massive technological paradigm shift has now made it possible to be a little bit famous. The internet is a game changer, and now every comic can have a following, no matter how small. I sometimes wonder how some of the esoteric stand-ups of the 70s might have fared if they had the social media of MySpace and Facebook at their disposal. Maybe they wouldn't have given up or quit from exhaustion if their 600 rabid fans were able to communicate with them and recognize their genius. I think of the case of Paul Mandel, who I met in 1974, just before starting Yuck Yucks. He looked a lot like Bob Dylan and did a great Bob Dylan impression. But I'd never seen anyone synthesize laughter, sorrow, and anger quite like him. The world was an unholy mess. Better to laugh at it than kill yourself, which was, he reminded us, always an option. He had no interest in politics. He was more interested in the politics of love and hate. I've never encountered a stronger cup of coffee than Paul Mandel. I remember the night he became a star in our little comedy world at Harborfront. He sat on stage, reading his divorce papers and throwing sticky buns at the audience. It was brilliant, especially when he began to laugh maniacally.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?